Welcome to this new episode of the Teachers of Europe podcast. This is a podcast to support teachers across Europe in addressing common classroom challenges and featuring educators that can inspire others to follow in their footsteps. The podcast has its home on the European School Education Platform, a European Union platform for schools funded by the Erasmus Plus program. My name is Benjamin Hertz, and I'm your host for this episode. In this episode, we're going to be looking at the idea of the school as a learning organization. So that means it's a place where not just students learn, but the whole community of all stakeholders who are part of that organization keep learning. And that means that we share questions with each other, that we try out new ideas together, that we reflect together, and we are constantly in that mode of learning. Now, one very practical way how schools are already doing this, or how they can do this, is through this idea of study groups. And these are small teacher-led communities that meet regularly to learn together. And often this happens in the context of an online professional development activity, like in a MOOC or a webinar series or a series of teach meets or something like this. And when they work well, these groups can turn professional development from a one-off event into an ongoing habit. And as a result of that, they can, or they have the potential, to change the entire culture of a whole school to that one of a learning organization. Now, to explore how this looks in real life, I'm joined today by Elena Pezzi, a language teacher from Bologna, who also works as a European project coordinator with the Regional Department of Education in the Emilia-Romagna region of Italy. And she is very experienced in leading study groups, both at our own school, but also at the regional level. Now, together, I hope to talk about what it really means to be a learning organization, how study groups can be set up and sustained, the benefits and challenges you've seen, and some concrete examples of impact that you have experienced. So, a warm welcome to you, Elena. Thank you for joining us here today.
Thank you. Hi, Ben. Nice to meet you again. And thanks for inviting me to take part in this podcast, in this episode. Well, very excited to tell you my experience.
Excellent, me too. And just for some context for the listeners, Ellen and I, we worked together a few years back before the COVID period on exactly this topic today on setting up some study groups. And Ellen was a very active contributor, pilot teacher in that activity. So I'm curious to hear what has happened since. Let's jump into it right then. So first, let's come back to this concept of schools as learning organizations and how the study groups fit within it. What in your view is a school as a learning organization? What does that mean for you? And are you in a school that is a learning organization?
I hope so. Well, for me, a learning organization is a school where learning doesn't stop with students, because we know that we teachers are learners as well. And it means that we also try to break down the isolation we often or sometimes feel in our classrooms. You know, I work in a secondary school, and generally speaking, in Italy, secondary schools are educational communities where teachers work with their students on their own in their classrooms. But collaboration, yes, it's something that happens, but it's not the general rule. So being a learning organization means that instead you work together, you meet together, you try to do something new. And in my school, I often say that my school is an old school. Actually, it was founded in 1861, so we are an old school, an ancient school, but I often say that we are young inside. So we have been trying for years to make this shift, going from an old school, an old concept of school, and we tried to move to a new idea of being a community, an educational community, where teachers are learning as well. So it means also that we accept that we don't have all the answers. You know, teachers are often worried about not having the answers, but it's normal. It's impossible to know everything. It's impossible to have all the answers. So being a learning organization, a learning community, means that you sit together, you meet together to try to find answers and try to learn something more to make your teaching routine, your teaching activities more effective in order to promote our students' learning.
Excellent, indeed. And that's what it's all about, right? The students learning, but we can only effectively do that if we also learn together as colleagues in the school. Thanks, Eleanor, for that. Can you maybe elaborate a bit more now on how the study groups can contribute to this vision that you've described?
Yeah, well, I think that study groups are the practical tool that makes this shift, this vision happen. They gave us at the beginning, and they still give us the regular structure to meet, to discuss real challenges at school, and above all, to support each other through learning. In our pilot, the pilot you mentioned before, we created a first study group around an online course on the former Teacher Academy platform. Then we created other study groups on the new ESEP platform. And taking part in these study groups really transformed the way teachers think about professional development. In my school, teachers are quite old. Not only the building is old, but we are more or less, the majority of us are over 50. So teachers were a little bit scared about taking an online course in English, an online course which supposed the use of digital technology. The participation in the study group helped them to overcome all their fears, because they knew that there was someone there, other colleagues there, ready to help them. If someone was scared about English, there was a language teacher who was there to help them to translate, to understand, to reformulate what they didn't understand. So this was the concrete help and the tool that helped us to promote the idea of being a learning community, a learning organization.
Can you elaborate a bit more on the first steps that you took when you set up your first study group and how that came to be? Yeah, and what practical sort of things did you do to get it going?
Well, the first step I took was I went to the head teacher's office and I explained her how the project was, what was the idea, and so on. So I thought that I had to have head teacher's support. And I still believe that it's crucial. Without your head teacher's support, you can't do anything. Then I went to a staff meeting and I explained again the idea of the project. And then we sent out a bulletin to all the teachers in my school explaining the project. Well, you know, in my school, we are more than 200 teachers. It was unbelievable that everybody would be interested, but the great surprise was that I got more than 30 teachers interested. You can think that 30 teachers is not that much, but in my school, for my reality at secondary level, I considered that having all those teachers interested in the pilot, in the experiment, well, it was a great success, even because the 30 teachers who were interested, well, actually 25 started the course, participated in the study group. So it was, and I think that it was thanks to the head teacher's support, approval, because she was really interested in doing something new for our school, something that could promote a new way of teaching, new methodologies. So it was really the key point. And also the other key factor was that the bulletin and then the situation where I explained to my colleagues the idea, the project, well, I was very, very sincere. I told them the truth, of course. So the course, it's in English, but we can start it with an Italian version, because there was an Italian version on the former eTwinning Learning Lab. So I told them, don't worry, we start with the Italian version and then we will move to the English one. Then I told them, because the head teacher promised me to do that, the participation in the study group would count for professional development, for the annual plan of professional development. So it was something recognized, officially recognized at school. So I think that this also was a good point, a key factor that helped to set up the study group.
Great. I think those are already sort of two or three key points that our listeners can take into account as key important success factors if they want to set up a study group. Support of the head teacher, getting some form of recognition, effective communication, and taking into account the kind of fears or worries that the teachers bring into this type of activity. Can you say a few more words about the makeup of the study group? Who was part of this? If I remember right, at the time you commented that it was a very diverse group. Can you say a few more words about that?
Yeah, and what's more, there were two very different groups, because as you mentioned at the beginning, I've got a sort of two personality, working personalities, because I work at school, at La Rebassi, my high school, and then at the regional department. So I decided to create two different study groups with two very different kind of teachers. At school, there were my colleagues, so teachers from different subjects with different levels of competences, both in foreign languages, digital technologies, and so on. And on the other side, at the regional level, the regional department, I had a study group formed by more experienced teachers. They were already teacher trainers. So, well, I created a study group at school dealing with the PBL course, online course, because I thought that at that moment, my school needed to deepen, to deeply understand the PBL approach and things like that. On the other hand, at the regional level, I created the study group dealing with the mentoring in schools online course, because those teachers didn't need to understand PBL, because they already knew a lot about PBL, but they needed to know how to be mentors. They were teacher trainers, but they wanted to acquire, to gain more skills about and more competences about being mentors for other teachers and also mentors for other schools. So these two diverse groups worked quite well, I think, and we produced some good things.
Yes, indeed. And I think if I remember correctly, you also mentioned that the school-based study group that you set up, it was made up of teachers from many different subject areas. And it was a real moment where you had an opportunity to collaborate across subjects in a quite sort of deep way, which was maybe not as common before. So yeah. I think that's something else to for the colleagues who are listening to keep in mind. And it relates to the whole concept of the learning organization, right? What you mentioned, that we need to bring colleagues together to talk to each other to build this kind of community of learning. Can you say a few more words about the practicalities of a study group? How often did you meet? What did you do during the meetings? How did you utilize the courses that you were sort of building the study groups around? Yeah, can you say a few more words about this?
Yeah. First of all, what you said is crucial, because after the study group, during the study group, and after the study group, we really saw teachers from different departments, from different subjects, talk together, sit down together, and plan, design learning activities. And this was something that wasn't so common at school. Well, so this was the first great success. How did we do the meetings and the whole organization? After asking the head teacher's approval, we decided to meet regularly. At the beginning, it was once a week. Then we passed once every 2 weeks. But there was another fear, another challenge we had: time. So I mentioned English, digital technologies, but the third, and I think the most problematic issue was time. Teachers, you know, are always busy. And my colleagues were scared because they, all of them, they told me, we can't do the homework. We can't do the assignment at home. We don't have time. So the great fear was, we are interested, but we don't know if we can complete the course because we don't have time at home to work. So what did we do? We came to an agreement and we decided to add two more meetings in presence to do the homework together. And this was an extra value, an extra good point for the study group, because it gave the group a sense of unity. Teachers perceived that they were starting to belong to a real educational community. They start enjoying their learning. Because one of the other fears was, well, an online course could be something boring, could be, well, you sit down there listening to someone explaining you something. Well, it was not like that. They gathered together, they met together, and they enjoyed being together to learn something new. And they enjoyed being there to create something good and something effective for their students. This was one of the best points. And we enjoyed also because, and this, I think it's something that we should remember, learning is also something that happens through doing something that produces joy. Learning is beautiful. So it has to be like that. So we brought coffee, sweets, and we were there together to work together, but to have a good time also together.
Very nicely put, Elena. And not to underestimate it, the importance of cake, sweets, or good coffee for the purpose of learning, indeed. Excellent, great. Can you elaborate a little bit more on the role of the online course? And do you think this kind of setup only works in the context of an online course, or could you see it also working in other types of contexts?
Well, I think that it could work on any type of context, provided you organize well your study group. I mean, the online course worked because we met, we followed the modules of the online course, but we combined the online modules with on-site activities. After watching the videos, after studying the content, we were there, we discussed together, and we tried to imagine some learning activities to implement between between the two meetings. After the first meeting, we tried to do something practical in class, every teacher tried to put in practice, and this was the other good point. And for this reason, I think that it could be applied in any context, not only online courses, but also other type of courses. After the first meeting, they tried to implement the activity in class. Then in the following meeting, we discussed it together. We analyzed what had worked or what had flopped. Why not? Because not everything is perfect. And this was the chain. After the second meeting, again, we tried something new. And starting from the very first meeting, we tried to make teachers collaborate together. And for example, one practical example was that with the same group of students, two teachers from two different subjects, a Spanish teacher and a science teacher, they decided to create a learning activity about sustainable tourism. And they worked together to plan, to design all the learning activities to implement in class. And The third thing that worked well was that we also visited each other's class. We even create a motto for this activity. We called it the kind guests, because the idea was a teacher is in class doing the activity, running the activity with the students. Another teacher, a colleague, comes to the class to observe, to see how things are going, but not with the judgment or not with the idea to control, to judge, to see what doesn't work. It's the idea to share the experience, to see how things are going, and hopefully to do the same thing in his or her class with another teacher coming there and sharing the same experience. So it's a circle. It's a communication, a contamination of experiences, which worked very, very well.
And it's a really excellent mechanism to ensure that this work that you started with the study group really feeds into what is happening in the classroom on a continual basis. And I think prolongs the deepening of the connections that you start with the study groups, but they're really just the start, right?
Yes, so, definitely. Yeah.
Great. Can I ask, I mean, because practicality is often very important when setting up this kind of work, do you think this could also work in an online context? So online study groups, it might not always be possible for teachers to come together face-to-face for time, logistic reason, maybe there's no room in the school or whatever else. Do you think that could work? Do you have experience with that?
Yeah. Well, I've mentioned, until now, I've talked about the at-school study group. With the group at the regional department, we had more online meetings rather than on-site meetings, and it works. I think that it works if teachers are a little bit more experienced. I mean, if they've got very low digital skills, it could be a little bit more difficult. But provided that COVID taught us how to deal with technology, I think that it could work. It could work very well. But you have always to bear in mind that online course has always to combine with practical activities. I mean, you can meet online, you can learn together online, but afterwards you have to put what you have learned in practice with your students in class or with your teachers, if the course is about how being mentors with other teachers. But the idea is having a good online basis, but always also having a practical aspect where you can put in practice what you've learned.
Can you identify maybe the biggest challenge or something that didn't really work out so well in the study group, something that other teachers, if they follow in those footsteps, should be aware of?
Yeah, I think that the biggest challenge was time. When you think about starting a study group, I think that the most important aspect you have to take into account is time management, because this can do the difference, can make the difference between working and not working. As I mentioned before, we realized that we needed more time to complete the course. The initial structure, we foresaw 5 or 6 meetings. Well, I thought they were enough, but actually it wasn't like that. We needed extra time. We needed to add 2 more meetings to complete the course. So if this aspect could be seen as something that didn't work, actually, if you pay attention, if you are always ready to rearrange, to reschedule the organization of the course, and of course, if you agree with you come to an agreement with the participants in the study group, it can be something positive. But the biggest challenge was, we don't have time. How can we do to complete the course? And if we didn't have added these two meetings, I think that half of the teachers wouldn't have completed the course.
Great. Thank you, Elena. If you would have to give one piece of advice to our listeners, hopefully there are several of them who are really inspired by what you're telling us and who want to now go into their schools and also start a study group. What would be that key advice you would give them?
Well, the first one and the most essential one is get your head teacher in. Without your head teacher approval, it's swimming upstream. No way around it. Then I think that another advice is, don't think too big. I mean, think big, but act small. Don't pretend to have everything, everyone on board. Don't pretend that all of your colleagues are interested, because they are not. So start with a small group, a small but an interested small group of colleagues, because learning is also contagious. If other colleagues, other teachers see that there's a small group who enjoys working together, learning together, well, other people will join. They will ask you, what are you doing? Why are you planning or designing this learning activity? Do you think it works? Well, if you spread the word, then other people would join. And I've always the same idea in my mind, make things being enjoyable.
Great, excellent. And I think, you know, this was something I also wanted to mention, because what you've described to us is, you know, very comprehensive, with the kind of follow-up and the kind of extra meetings and the setup at the regional department. I mean, this is inspirational. It doesn't need to be this comprehensive, right? I think, as you said, starting small with a small group of teachers, just getting to know each other, taking a course together, that's the start. And as you said, learning is inspirational, so more teachers will hopefully then join along the way. What advice would you give, not to teachers who want to do this, but to those who develop the courses that you utilize or that you utilized in the study groups? European School Education Platform, eTwinning, we offer a lot of different online courses and different online professional development activities. What is it that you would need, or that teachers who want to set up study groups would need to help them in their work at school level?
I will answer with the words of my colleagues, because at the end of the course, we always have we give a survey to, and we discuss about the course, what they found interesting and whatnot. So, the majority of my colleagues told me that what they really appreciated were the short videos. The creators, the designers of the online courses should take it into account. Short videos, perhaps more videos, but short videos are the best option, at least for my teachers. But I think it's a good point, because online learning can be it can be sometimes a little bit hard. So if you keep it small, keep it short, even because not everybody is confident, not everybody feels at ease with a foreign language. So short videos, short modules, short documents to read or to analyze. Well, I think this is a good aspect to take into account.
Excellent. Thank you, Anna. We'll take that on board and we'll try to make that happen. Really important to that we can bring these two levels together, the kind of local context-based environment as a school, and where the study group learning happens together with that international community and international learning, or that learning with the international community of peers that exists on the European School Education Platform and eTwinning. And I think the combination of two is a really, really powerful mix. So many thanks, Eleanor. I think it's been really inspirational to listen to your experiences, to hear the very practical details of what you did in your school and at your regional department, and the impact that has had on teachers in particular, and as an organization in your school as a whole as well. Let's hope it's inspired some of our listeners to take it forward. We will make sure to, of course, link to the relevant resources that you were also part of developing a couple of years ago as part of the pilot. Yes. And then let's see if we can get more study groups off the ground moving forward. And as a result of that, also more schools as learning organizations. So thank you very much, Eleanor, for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you a lot, Ben.
And to our listeners, just a quick final word. This is our last episode of the year, but please keep an eye out for news for more episodes. We will be back more regularly next year. We have a lot more episodes coming next year. Topics are still to be announced, but I guarantee you that they will be exciting ones. So many thanks for joining us, and we wish you a great holiday period and look forward to being back in the new year. Goodbye.